Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today, it's an open forum. What does that mean to you? I don't know. Here's what it means to me. It means that we're going to pick some topics and we're going to talk about them. I want to focus today's open forum on local and state. Maybe local, regional, state, however you want to look at it. There's a lot to talk about. The first thing that my spouse brought up this morning when he was hunkered over the newspaper was Maurice Clarett. Ohio State University says former football star Maurice Clarett has been granted readmission to pursue his degree after he spent more than 3 years in prison. Ohio State spokesman Jim Lynch says that Maurice started classes yesterday after he was readmitted by the College of Education and Human Ecology. If you didn't know or have forgotten, Maurice Clarett led the Buckeyes to the 2002 National Championship in his only college season. He pleaded guilty in 2006 to aggravated robbery and carrying a concealed weapon and served 3.5 years in a Toledo prison where he took college credit courses. So what do you think about Maurice Clarett returning to OSU, this time as strictly as a student, and starting his life over again? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. There are other things to talk about. That was just the first thing that popped out of my spouse's mouth this morning. But there's also the rash of teen versus teen shootings in Columbus. It's raising concern among some city leaders about how to stop the violence. And Mayor Michael Coleman last week said you don't need an AK-47 to shoot deer at the corner of Broad and High in Columbus Point, meaning that he says that attempts made to curb the number of guns on city streets get shot down by the U.S. Supreme Court and by some Ohio lawmakers. He says that far too many guns are being made available. We're a gun state. We allow concealed weapons by law. We allow the proliferation of guns in all of our communities, he said. Is that the problem behind the teen violence, behind the rash of teen versus teen shootings in Columbus? Let me know, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So we've got Maurice Clarett. Ohio State University says the former football star has been granted readmission. He started classes yesterday after he was readmitted by the College of Education and Human Ecology. What do you think about Maurice getting back to school, getting back on track? And there is also an issue about a bridge over the Scioto River. Columbus Dispatch did a story on that over the weekend. And it's the Main Street Bridge. It's just about finished. They're going to have kind of a quiet opening this week where they can open up, I think, one lane of traffic and the bike and the walking paths across the bridge. What do you think? It was supposed to be start out at, about $20 million. Now it's to about a little over $60 million for the final cost, which is still under the last budget they set, or at least they have about $63, $64 million to spend, so they'll come in under that. The funding sources are varied, including taxpayers who will be paying off bonds and so forth. What do you think about the bridge over the Scioto River downtown, the Main Street Bridge? It'll open this week. 614-292-8513. There are a lot of other issues at the state and local level we can talk about. The Tea Party movement is a state and local issue. We could talk about that. Bill Hershey of the Dayton Daily News wrote recently that some voters are upset and looking for someone to lash out at. No incumbent is safe from their wrath. Governor Strickland in 2006 promised to turn around Ohio. He didn't qualify the pledge by adding, except if the economy tanks. So, likewise, the incumbent issue and the fragility of incumbents in this economic downturn. What do you think about that? Is it fair, or is it fair to blame them for the economy, or is it fair to blame them for not acknowledging that things were going south 2 or 3 years ago? Likewise, is it John Kasich's fault that the company he worked for on Wall Street, Lehman Brothers, is the poster child for the financial meltdown of 2008? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And I'm always interested in talking about that state budget shortfall. They're estimating right now about $8 billion in a shortfall. Just gone through a couple of state budget cuts, seasons of state budget cuts. This last one was very, very tough on human services. Libraries took a big hit. The one before that wasn't much better. It was static, if not including cuts for state agencies and state departments. This one coming up, it's impossible to know where they're going to cut everything from. They certainly can't cut it from prisons, which brings up another issue. There is a study out. There are currently 50,000 inmates in Ohio's prisons, 10,000 of whom are considered nonviolent. A new study finds that the state could save millions of dollars by finding alternatives to prison for low-level felony convicts. Tony Fabello was one of the authors.
Low-level drug offenders mainly, not staying there long enough for them to benefit from any of the correctional programs, and consuming about $189 million a year of prison space.
But Auglaize County Judge Frederick Pepples says being soft on criminals is not the answer.
If there are 15 kids watching the guy on the street corner selling crack, and they see that he gets a wrist slap, are they going to be inclined to believe, well, that was not that big of a deal, and be more inclined to do it or not?
If the current trend continues, prison officials are expecting to house 3,000 more inmates during the next 3 years. By adopting the study's recommendations, they say they could save $1 billion. But that's just one out of eight that's looking to make up the upcoming shortfall. So what do you think about that? Give us a call right now, 614-292-8513. And Rod, welcome to the show. You want to talk about the state budget?
Yes. Good morning. I wanted to talk a little bit about the state budget and the Main Street Bridge and the Shirley Sherrod affair.
Okay.
Basically, so far as the state budget is concerned, I really think they're going to have to increase taxes. I think the poor in this state have already taken a hit. I know I'm familiar. I don't know if you're familiar with an organization called COVA, which helps people with disabilities look for jobs and so forth. Mm-hmm. But they have taken a hit. They've closed their center to people with disabilities who don't have a counselor. You have to have financial help from the Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation, which incidentally has tightened their standards so far as who receives help.
Mm-hmm.
That's a state agency that gets federal help, and also state help, and also the libraries have cut back their hours, so
right.
It's interesting that at a time when we should be encouraging people to look for work, we're doing a lot of things to cut back on programs that supposedly are there to help people look for work.
Well, state-funded positions or publicly funded positions are jobs, aren't they?
They are.
And so when folks talk about eliminating all these excess workers out there, they're talking about getting rid of jobs.
That's right.
But they don't want it on the backs of the taxpayers.
Apparently not. No, they don't want to do it. They put it on the backs of the people that, like I said, the people that can least afford to be hurt right now by the recession, or that are already being hurt by the recession.
Well,
and,
yeah.
Right now could use a hand up, so far as that's concerned.
So we're looking at an $8 billion shortfall. It's an estimate. But what do you think? Raising taxes?
I think they're going to have to raise taxes at some point and raise them on the people, making the most money. So that's, like I said, that's basically where I stand on that.
Okay.
So far as the Main Street Bridge is concerned, I think it's an ugly bridge. It doesn't fit in with the downtown at all. The downtown, basically, if you look at the Ohio Department's building and the Levesque Tower, they're both Art Deco and in design. And I think one of the assets that we had was the Broad Street and the Town Street bridges that looked, like I said, they fit in with the architecture of the area.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't think the Main Street Bridge fits at all.
How do you like the idea that there's going to be the biking path and the walking path there?
I like the idea of the biking path and the walking path. Mm-hmm. That goes in with the complete streets philosophy of the mayor. At least that, you know, they did that part right. If I could comment on the Shirley Sherrod affair,
yes.
E.J. Dionne had it right. I don't know if you saw him on.
Well, let's first remind folks that Shirley Sherrod is the U.S. Department of Agriculture employee that was several years ago was speaking to a group, on, I think it was NAACP group.
Right.
In the telling of a story, admitted that she had once considered discriminating against somebody because they were white. And the clip was heavily edited and shrunk down into a few minutes and came across like she did discriminate against this person. So go ahead. And
anyway, I'm in complete agreement with I don't know if you saw E.J. Dionne on Meet the Press Sunday, but he said that the mainstream media has been looking timorously over its shoulder while allowing the right wing, you know, he called them the right wing media. I don't know if I entirely agree with that part of the statement, but been allowing the right wing media to pump the sludge into the political waters.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I feel, you know, like I said, I'm basically in agreement with that statement.
Do you think that the administration and the Department of Agriculture acted too quickly? Didn't act quickly enough? Did anything inappropriate? What do you think about how they responded to what Shirley did?
I think they, you know, they reacted too quickly, and I would go with the NAACP, you know, I'd also include the NAACP in that. They didn't stop and say, now, wait a minute, you know, who's this guy that put out this video, and who's putting it on the air? And basically, they both overreacted, or, you know, reacted too quickly in censuring Ms. Sherrod and in firing her. Frankly, you know, if I was her, you know, I wouldn't want to go back to work. You know, I'm in agreement with her. I would not want to go back to work for an administration that acted so hastily.
Mm-hmm. They didn't investigate fully before they took action.
That's right.
They just assumed.
They made assumptions, or, you know, and I think the way that she was fired too, you know, was a little bit tacky. You know, they basically just gave her, gave her a cell phone call on, you know, had her pull along the side of the road and fired her on the spot.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rod, thanks for your call.
Okay, well, thank you for the time, and have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll get to a couple more phone calls. One about Maurice Claret. Is this a wake-up call? Let us know what you think about Maurice Claret. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I know my associate producer, Amy Jurovich, is scanning Facebook, so you can comment there as well, and we will get to it. And also, what about that prison realignment study? What do you think about that? Streamlining the prisons, getting rid of the nonviolent offenders, moving them into community alternatives. 614-292-8513. We have an open forum on local and state issues and politics. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features more than 30 neighborhoods in and around the city. It allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of Columbus. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org.
Support for WOSU comes from Thrifty Airport Valet Parking, a valet service for business and leisure travelers that takes you in your car to curbside check-in at Port Columbus, 614-237-5800 or thriftycolumbus.com.
It's 80 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today, a high of 88. A few clouds tonight and a low of 68 degrees. Some sunshine and a chance of rain for Wednesday and a high of 90. All Sides continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're having an open forum today. We're talking about state and local issues, headlines in the state and local department, and also a little bit of politics and a little bit of national, including the issue of Shirley Sherrod, the federal employee who was, I suppose one way to put it is misquoted or misinterpreted in a video.
Can you drive it on around?
Pardon me? Steve, are you there?
Yeah, yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you call me.
Yeah, you're on the air.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Yeah, I agree with the last caller. I do consider myself a conservative, and at the conservative end of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree that with the last caller that the Sherrod affair was handled very, very poorly. It should have been investigated. I'm embarrassed by the quote unquote right wing media on that one. They really railroaded her. Oh, that was just the wrong thing to do. The main thing that I wanted to comment about, though, yeah, was the budget.
Okay.
And the budget, we have to cut spending, period. We've got to eliminate some of these programs that everybody's counting on to try to take care of every last little thing that the public is trying to get everybody else to pay for.
What do you think?
We just don't have enough money.
Yeah, well, no question. I mean, most folks are saying it's going to be a combination of massive cuts and possibly some tax adjustments. But Steve, what do you think should be cut? Because we're talking about $8 billion now, and they're saying even if they adopted that study on the prisons and streamlined it that way and got rid of the non-violent offenders and put them into community.
That really just shows how far out of control the government has gotten with spending the money of their of the public. This fiasco that's going on right now with the saying that people are not being loyal to the state of Ohio by moving to Florida, that just shows how out of control our spending has become.
Well, now you're talking about Lieutenant Governor candidate Mary Taylor. She was a CPA before she became state auditor, and she says when she was a CPA, she would advise her clients to move to Florida to avoid Ohio taxes because the income tax rate in Florida is lower than Ohio, or there is no income tax. There are a lot of other taxes in Ohio that wouldn't affect wealthy people as much as they would poor people, however.
Well, even so, if the state of Ohio can't get by on a 7 or 8% sales tax or the income tax on their on the citizens, then what are we spending that money on? If the state of Florida can do it, we should be able to do it as well. Except that we are spending the money on way too many public programs.
Like what?
Like the gentleman just before me said, I would love for everybody to be able to afford to go to a counselor to get a job, but we can't afford those public positions. We can't afford to spend another several hundred million dollars to hire counselors to talk to people and tell them how to get a job.
Well, where's
you need to get out there and go out of the pavement and find one.
Well, wait.
A counselor.
Who's suggesting the state spend a couple hundred million bucks doing that?
Well, the last caller just mentioned that we needed to hire more counselors to help the people try to find jobs.
Okay, I don't quite remember that. Now, our last hour, we were talking about the job search for seniors, for older folks, but all those groups were nonprofit organizations; they weren't government.
Okay,
so that's where a lot of the job counseling comes from—is nonprofit nowadays.
Well, that's terrific. But I think if you look at the size of the. The size of the government and the amount of government spending, it's just gotten way out of control.
Okay.
You were just talking about that bridge.
Yeah.
Why do we need to spend that $60 million on a bridge? How much of that went to engineering studies and actually building the bridge? And how much of that went to architect's fees to make it look pretty?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that went to overtime because of the last-minute change? Why wasn't the bridge built according to what it needed to be? Instead of something that somebody wanted it to look like.
Mm-hmm. You don't think it matters what it looks like?
No. Okay. It's designed to call cars.
Well, and people and bicycles and that kind of a thing. Do you like
and
that about it?
And people what?
Well, it has a walkway across it. It has a bikeway across it.
That's fine, as long as it's carrying its own weight there. But the money that was used to build that bridge came from the taxpayers buying gasoline. It was the gasoline tax that was paying for that.
Some of it.
Not the bicycle riders.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And whatever didn't come from them came from federal or state funding, which there again, that goes exactly to what I was just saying. Mm-hmm. We're spending money that we don't have for things that we don't need.
All right. Well, Steve, thanks for giving us a call. Take care.
Thanks.
You bet. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have a message from Grace on Facebook. She writes, given the fact that the state budget has an $8 billion deficit and the very real possibility that the administration might change, would it be wise to avoid employment with the state of Ohio? Are these jobs at risk in a way that private sector jobs are not? And, you know, that's a really good question, Grace, but I think bottom line is the what kind of job it is important when it comes to answering that question. Is it a classified job where you're protected by state employee bargaining and negotiations with the unions, or is it a job where you serve at the pleasure of the administration, an unclassified job? If it was an unclassified job, and if you're worried about the administration changing in any of the state elected offices, I guess the answer would be yes, it would be a risk to change a job at that point into something like that. On the other hand, if you're unemployed and you can get a job like that for another 6 months, it might be better than nothing. As far as a classified goes, that's another question. There's a lot more protections for classified employees, the layoffs. But if you're first hire, if you're new to the job, it is with most, it's typical that if you're the most recently hired, you would be the first fired. So it wouldn't have the seniority. But again, if you're looking for a job and you're out of work, I guess it's something's better than nothing. 614-292-8513. We have another message on Facebook from Liz. How about making gay marriage legal in Ohio? We could really bring in a lot of money by giving the people what they want. Columbus is already GLBT friendly, whether people know it or not. Why not make the next step possible? I'd love to know, Liz, what do you mean by bringing in a lot of money? If you could just get back to us on that. What do you mean by bringing in a lot of money? With marriage licenses, that sort of a thing, or just attracting more people to the state because it's GLBT friendly? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, as did Grace and Liz. Let's see. Mike, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks very much for having me on the show. I thoroughly enjoy your show.
Thank you, Mike.
Unfortunately, I have a tremendous amount of time to listen to you right now, being one of those that are unemployed. And unemployed for the first time since I got out of high school, and I'm 59 years old.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, well, thanks. I'm really the happiest unemployed person on earth because I found many things to fill my void. But before I want to stay on task with this, but it's kind of interesting, the bridge situation. Real quick comment,
mm-hmm.
$20 million to build a bridge, but I'll do it. I'm going to get it done for $60 million. you or I take a job for $20,000 a year. We mysteriously get paid $60,000 a year. I think that's kind of interesting. It wouldn't happen. No idea how this happens with the construction.
But, you know, it's very, very extremely typical for public works projects, particularly highway-related public works projects and transportation-related public works projects, to inflate like this.
Not in Europe.
The study that I was looking at this morning was from London.
Well, the study that I saw from road construction, bridge construction, also was from England itself. It didn't specifically say London.
Okay.
But it was from Great Britain. And from the quality of the materials used, mm-hmm. to the quotes that are done and the lasting effects of the work and how long they live.
Yeah.
I mean, we're constantly doing our roads. They're not. They do spend about three times as much as us to get them done, but they don't need to employ workers every year to out there fixing potholes.
They also depend a lot more on mass transportation.
Well, they do. And we could do that, too. But, you know, having, you know, trolley cars running around downtown Columbus isn't the anyway. I'm off topic.
So you're one of those Ricerone people, huh?
I don't want to be one of anybody. I really don't want to be one of anybody. But,
okay.
But I do have an interesting point about the unemployment
situation.
I've been unemployed since about the middle of November, and although I did find part-time work, which I'm really thrilled with, it doesn't pay much money, but it gets me out of the house, and it gets me out with people, and whether it's verbal networking or just having a great time working 3 days a week, I thoroughly enjoy it. But let me explain quickly what it did. I was collecting unemployment benefits, and then we almost had a bicyclist run over by a car. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
So I was collecting unemployment benefits and then took this part-time employment, and you report your unemployment to unemployment each week, and I report, you know, I was collecting, let's say, $300 a week in unemployment. So now I'm making $180 a week part-time. I report that, and they take that portion from your unemployment benefits and give you the difference plus a small percentage for being in the workforce, which
mm-hmm.
turns out to be ridiculous in as much as what it did was I had $6,000, let's say, worth of benefits, and they would have expired on May 15th had I not taken part-time work. But because I took part-time work and only drew smaller amounts each week, it took longer to draw down my $6,000, and therefore, on June 8th, I ran out of benefits. Because I ran past May 22nd, which was the imposed guideline for Tier 2 and Tier 3 and thus Tier 4, I qualified for zip, zilch, nada, nothing. So I fell off the unemployment rolls until perhaps now, which is still unclear in the state of Ohio as to the last email I received from them. My question to you, and you may not have the answer, but neither does the unemployment office, if I continue working part-time right now with the new set of benefits to the federally extended benefit guidelines, whatever they're calling them,
mm-hmm.
is there any benefit to me working part-time, or is it a number of weeks now and not a pool of money, or is it the pool of money and therefore I extend the time that I draw it down by working and earning money? The incentivization for us to work today, as I view it, is nil to almost
mm-hmm.
minus. And I'm trying to be productive here, and yet I feel I'm being penalized for doing so.
I would admit, the way you describe it, it sounds like the only benefit is the fact that you get something to put on your quote-unquote resume, that you are out there and you are interacting with people and you're in the workforce, and that's got to be positive. But I've heard the complaint that you're mentioning before.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear the answer to that because, you know, I could be networking to find the real full-time job that I need, and I'm just coming back from Columbus State where I'm going to go back to school, but
mm-hmm.
but I could be doing a lot of other things with those 18 hours a week that I'm putting in part-time not to draw $180 worth of unemployment benefits.
You know,
think it is ridiculous.
Maybe it's a good idea for a program then. We get somebody in from the Ohio Bureau of Employment Services, that kind of a thing, and let's just talk brass tacks about unemployment benefits in Ohio right now.
The sooner you do that, the better, because
yep.
you know, the guy from AARP, I've met with him before, 40-plus. I know all these agents,
mm-hmm.
and they're great.
Yeah.
They're great. It's a whole subculture of trying to help those of us that are older. But the facts are you cannot talk to a live human being in the unemployment office here in the state of Ohio.
Okay. All
right. So I think that's wonderful, and if you could do it, it'd be great. And I listen to you every day, so
thanks
for the great show.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for calling. Take care. Good luck.
Bye. Thank you.
614-292-8513. Chris, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you for taking my call. I really
you're
appreciate
welcome.
The job you've been doing in filling the slot since you started.
Thanks.
I have two points.
Okay.
First point is that regarding accountability for Michael Coleman, Barack Obama, or any other elected public official, I think we have a disconnect between principles that they were elected on and the their conduct once in office. And I believe until there has been some success in some sort of a referendum, impeachment, I don't know what the proper terminology is, to pull a couple people out of public office who have failed to be accountable to the people, that we're pretty much going to be saddled with people who pretty much once in office are pandering to the construction industry interests in these big civil projects like Michael Coleman's $40 million cost overrun on his bridge. And the second point I want to make real quickly is that we are collectively responsible for for a lot of our own problems in this country by the endemic tax evasion, which is so much a part of our culture.
Interesting.
And, you know, a lot of people want to point to illegal aliens and the fact that one guy gets a green card and he's getting paid by the construction industry, the general contractor, and then he's got, you know, four or five friends that are illegals that are being paid under the table and nobody's paying tax. That's, everybody likes to point to that problem as part of the big problem with immigration. However, the fact that so many of our citizens, you know, justify, rationalize working, quote, under the table, unquote, and not paying the legally mandated income tax, Social Security tax, on their income, I believe is the reason that we are not funding our health care, we are not funding our schools, and a lot of other projects that we believe are for the public good.
What do you think about there's a kerfuffle over State Auditor Mary Taylor? She is, of course, the running mate for John Kasich. She'll be the lieutenant governor if he's elected. And she said last week that when she was a CPA, she advised clients of hers, wealthy clients, to leave the state of Ohio and to move to Florida, where the income taxes are cheaper. Income taxes, of course, are harder on people with wealth. Sales tax is a flat tax, and it's harder on people without wealth. What do you think about that?
I have no problem with the CPA giving people financial advice to go to a climate where the laws are more favorable to their financial interests.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm talking about is simple, straight-up tax evasion,
like the
so-called Christian carpet cleaner who comes to my house and tells me it'll be $350 to clean my carpet, or if I'll make the check out to him instead of his company, it'll only be $300, and Uncle Sam won't know about it. That kind of stuff is endemic in our culture. I've got a mechanic. They say, do you want the cash price or do you want the above board price? It's everywhere in our culture. And, you know, people rationalize and justify as they may, but I believe that the look the other way attitude about, you know, enforcing the laws of this country is the big problem with funding so many purposes that we think are for the public good.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. You too. We are going to take a short break. In the meantime, if you think of something you want to talk about, Maurice Clarette, that bridge over the Scioto, Ohio's prison system, the $8 billion, the estimated $8 billion budget shortfall coming up this year. Then we'll hear about how one county is coping with the less tax revenue to pay for their roads when we return. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, the classified military documents leaked by WikiLeaks. We talk with New York Times reporter Mark Mazzetti about the decision to publish those documents in the Times and what they reveal about the war in Afghanistan. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email and sign up for one of our e-newsletters. And WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Tomorrow at noon, it's Painting the World Scarlet and Gray, featuring Vice Provost for Global Strategies and International Affairs at The Ohio State University. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org. It's 81 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:40. Sunshine today, a high of 88. A few clouds tonight, a low of 68. Some sunshine and a chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm for Wednesday, and a high of 90 degrees. And looking ahead to Wednesday night, clouds and a chance of rain and a low right around 70. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Mid-July is peak paving season in Ohio. Most road crews are laying asphalt or pouring concrete, but in Coshocton County, on some roads less traveled, the county engineer allows some formerly paved roads to return to gravel surfaces. WOSU's Tom Borgerding recently reported that the return of some gravel roads is a response to declining revenues for road repairs. And complaints about road conditions is familiar to Coshocton County Engineer Fred Wachtel.
Since 1993, Wachtel has been in charge of maintaining 350 miles of county roads. He has a $5 million annual budget. About $1.2 million is spent each year on resurfacing projects. Last year, the economic downturn reached his office.
In 2009, that was the first year since I've been in office that our revenue has actually declined from previous years. Every other year we had ramped up a little bit. We saw the dollars, you know, our revenue drop. We budgeted this year's revenue based upon our 2007 revenues.
I remember reporting some years back about how those kinds of roads cost school districts a lot of money in their transportation budget. So, it's kind of pay me now or pay me later. But this is one way that Coshocton County is trying to live within its means, letting the roads go a little bit. Is that okay with you? Give me a call, 614-292-8513. On the other hand, do you want to spend $60 million on a bridge over the Scioto River? That's another question. Ed, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Ann. I wanted to respond, first of all, to what Steve was saying. I get really tired of people that are holding jobs or have retired from the workforce trying to tell people that are looking for jobs in the workforce what they should or shouldn't be able to have available to them in the way of resources to help them find a job or a better job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been widely reported that across the country, there's only one job available for every five people that are looking. So I guess I'd like to know how those other four people are going to find work and what are we going to do. We don't have enough soup kitchens. We don't have enough charitable organizations to take care of all those people that are actually looking. And you know, he keeps talking about how much money we're spending on programs and things like that. Well, as the one caller said, there's two things that are going to have to happen. We are going to have to cut spending. We are going to have to raise taxes. And everybody's going to scream and holler about that. But I'll bet when you talk about taxes, they don't think about the homestead exemption we're getting that cuts down the amount of our property taxes once you reach a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
As a sop to the elderly. There's all kinds of tax loopholes, tax breaks. One of the things that I think needs to be done, and maybe you remember the 60 Minutes special from quite a few years ago about the White House down in the Virgin Islands or one of those places down there that's where it's technically the home office of something like 15,000 corporations, and all it is a mail drop. There's taxes that would come back to this country. We don't value good solid work in this country anymore. About a year ago when GM was downsizing and they capped their contract at $15 an hour for somebody that actually makes a project on an assembly line, that same week it was announced that Bank One was getting a tax abatement for moving more telecommunications jobs into Columbus. You know, jobs that are in an office, sit there and answer a phone all day, and yet those were estimated to be $20 an hour jobs for actually sitting around. You know, to me,
I kind of sit around and
saying, you know, we don't value the work that actually makes something in this country. Mm-hmm. And we even outsource those telephone jobs. So what does that say? I mean, the business in this country has been given so many tax breaks to do things, to move the jobs overseas. In one case, I think it was the Stanley plant in Connecticut to actually take the plant apart and then ship it to China or wherever they rebuilt the plant. That would help right there if we recreated our work base, but we have so much resistance from any kind of a good paying job. You hear it all the time. Well, the union's this, the union's that, or we shouldn't be paying for this, we shouldn't be paying for that. The teachers make too much, these people make too much. But we don't hear the screams from those same people when you've got CEOs making something like 300 times the basic line worker in their corporation, running the company into the ground and then getting the golden parachute. You know, we're totally backwards in the way this country is organized anymore as far as the division of labor and what labor actually means.
What it, how it's valued. Yeah, a lot of folks would say that the labor unions are the backbone of the country. They built the middle class.
Yeah, well, they gave us the 40-hour work week, the weekend, overtime.
Did they go too far, though, Ed? I mean, it's, what happened to the relationship with the labor unions and the public?
What happened was that the unions began to be vilified because they were making too much money. You know, it was said, well, they're dictating. And it goes back to Ronald Reagan when he fired the air traffic controllers, but it started long before that. Unions have been vilified because they were supposedly dictating to the companies what they can do. And there are some very, very egregious instances of work rules that are put in place. But you know what? The unions couldn't do those on their own. Somebody in management had to sign off on those work rules. So, you know, you look at the situation in the post office that came up a couple of months ago where these guys are sitting around with nothing to do because they abolished their jobs, but because they have the contract that says they've been in the post office long enough, they're guaranteed other work, but then they wouldn't put them in that other work. They told them to go sit in the break room. You know, how stupid is that kind of management? You know, management does have the right to mismanage, but let's not blame it on the workers when management tells them what to do and then things go downhill. It's a two-way street. It's not all the unions. It's not all management. They do work hand in hand, but I believe that unions in many cases, most cases actually, I'll say, have been unjustly vilified for things that companies went and signed off on because, of course, everybody was living high on the hog in the 40s and 50s and 60s when unions really got their major, major wage increase.
Okay. It's complicated, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Ed, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What about the Jackets? Chief wants casino tax to aid team. Blue Jackets president believes that the casino taxes that will flow to Columbus and Franklin County would be the best fix for the hockey team's financial woes. What do you think about that? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Joe, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
And I want to first congratulate you because you had some big shoes to fill, and by gosh, you filled them and filled them well. And I certainly appreciate the talent and the skills that you brought to the station.
Thank you, Joe. You know, it's been just about a year since I moved over to the station. I think I started here August 7th or 8th last year, so.
Well, my schedule doesn't allow me to call in very often.
Well, I'm glad you did.
And I haven't called yet, but I'm a frequent listener, even I catch your show more in the evening.
Sure.
and I don't think you take calls at that time.
No.
but one of the things I'd like to see happen is sometimes that you would play with doing the live show in the evening. You know, to catch some of us that aren't so available in the mornings. But the other thing that I wanted to comment, and one of the things that happens with people, and it's happened forever, that they aren't concerned until it affects them or someone they care about. And as long as the economy doesn't affect us, you know, me or my family or my relatives or my friends, then I'm really not concerned. But when it starts affecting us, then we become concerned. One of the things that happens is when it's like rain. If it only rains on this side of the street, the other person, whether or not he does anything about it, you know, it doesn't happen because rain happens on both sides of the street. Well, this time the economy is happening on both sides of the street. The white-collar workers, all these people that thought they were above it, have all of a sudden been involved now because their jobs disappeared, as well as the union jobs. Used to be not that that wasn't the case. They got moved or transferred or whatever, or they you know, found another position in the place of employment.
Right.
Now their jobs have been gone. You know, they're gone.
Right.
And so they have to be retrained. And all of these manufacturing jobs just didn't all of a sudden disappear. They've been going on for a long time away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're feeling the effects now. And we're feeling the effects. effects, and we, as citizens, don't know what to do. The government, unfortunately or fortunately, has been dealing with a lot of this stuff, but they don't get the effects right away until the taxes start falling, and the revenues is what generates what they can spend. But they're committed to these contracts and to these workers, to these buildings, to all these programs that have, you know, that were started years ago. And they don't, it's just not like turning the water on and off. You just can't do that. And we need some balanced things, but one of the things that we need to do is to talk instead of shouting and putting the other person down mm-hmm. without listening to what the other person has to say and taking it into account. Now, you know, there's a lot of things that I'm going to say and you're going to say and such that have no bearing, but somewhere you have to have some dialogue. And this country right now has no dialogue between opposing sides. They just fight and bicker, or they don't do nothing to make the other one fail, or they don't do anything to make the other one succeed at something they don't think is right. And it doesn't work. It's not working. And it's not worked for a long time, but it really hasn't affected everybody as much as the economy does. And the economy affects everybody. I'm from the hilltop, and I used to tell people, and people will hear this, if you want people to attend the meeting, tell them you're going to discuss trash cans. Okay? Because that's the only time we can get people to come out to meetings here on the hilltop, because the trash cans affected everybody. Everybody had a trash can.
All right. Or theirs was getting stolen or something.
Yeah. And that's the thing. This economy is affecting everybody now. Nobody stood up and hollered at BP when they were buying Standard Oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
I mean, Standard Oil had the mainstay of the oil pipeline from Alaska, and all of a sudden a foreign country came in and bought it right out from underneath everybody, and everybody was standing back saying, oh, yeah, because my stock is going up. You know, it did.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever cried foul play when AT&T recombobulated and all of a sudden bought NCR, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then NCR all of a sudden moved to Georgia.
Right.
You know, but nobody cries when the things are going on until it starts affecting them. You know?
Well, it's a couple times, you know, people have referred to our society these days as narcissistic.
Oh, much so. And mm-hmm. we are all into instantaneous gratification.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be paid, or we want some kind of a reward immediately. We don't want it 2 or 3 years later, or we don't want to wait. And these younger people and the middle-aged, everybody, including myself, we all are reaping the rewards of our fathers and our forefathers. And in order to keep reaping the rewards, you have to constantly keep paying. It's like the guy with the golden goose, you know. The goose was gold. It wasn't only the eggs, but you had to take care of the goose to keep getting the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you quit feeding the goose, she quit mm-hmm. laying the eggs.
If you cut it open and try to grab it all,
Right. Yeah, and it's the same thing. Look at all these people now that are saying sell the prisons. Get the government. Every time government sells something, a big entity that they've done because nobody else was willing to do it, the companies that take over run it until they bleed it mm-hmm. to death, and then they give it back to the government. It happens with roads. It happens with everything that big business normally will take over that's been a government entity
mm-hmm.
normally always comes back to the government broken, a lot worse than what it was when it left.
Joe.
Okay.
I got a couple calls waiting.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. And listen, girl, keep up the good job as sure as Well, I know you will, but I mean, and it's really wonderful to have somebody that is fair and unbiased as you are.
Thanks.
Presiding over a talk-in show here in Columbus. We've got something better than most places have with you at the helm. Okay.
Thanks, and I'll work on that nighttime show for you.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. All righty. 614-292-8513. We have about two more minutes. Ralph, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the show.
Is this Ralph?
This is Ralph.
Yes, I just wanted to. By the way, I agree with the last caller. I think you're doing a tremendous job, Ann Fisher, and I enjoy your programming very much.
Thank you.
I wanted to make maybe two comments. One about the union. My very first and last jobs were with unions, mm-hmm. and the rest of the time I either had my own company or worked for other companies. But I worked for Isley's in the late 1950s for 80 cents an hour. The Retail Clerks International Association, the union man would come in there wearing a diamond ring big enough to choke a horse. But anyway, that union did essentially nothing for its employees that I could see. My last job was with Lucent Technologies, and I was an RF technician there, made very good money, $25 an hour. And I thought the union went way too far in many different ways. Hmm. One of my primary complaints about the union was there were people who were able-bodied who did not work. They simply were laughing, listening to the radio, just goofing off all day long. If you said anything to a union steward or a union person about this person not working, they said, this is none of your business. You take care of your own business and don't worry about what other people do. That's our job.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing was ever done. And there weren't a great number of people that were goofing off, but there were some that just were goofing off all of the time. And I can see why the union disappeared, because here we were already some of the best paid people in town, some of the best blue-collar jobs.
Insecure jobs, I think, was more than anything.
Beg your pardon?
Relatively secure jobs.
Yes, you couldn't fire us with a stick of dynamite. I mean, that's literally you could not get rid of us. You had to fire everybody to get rid of me.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's what happened. They did get rid of everybody, because here we were, the wealthiest blue-collar workers around, and yet when we would go to Kings Island, who do you think was getting the discount? We were. We were making $25 an hour. These other people who weren't unionized, if they went to Kings Island, they had to pay full price. Anything we did, we were getting some kind of a discount here, there, and who knows where else. But my other comment I wanted to make...
And we only have about, 30 seconds, Ralph.
Okay, but all you white people out there that were born in America in the last 200 years, and by the way, I am Caucasian, mm-hmm. when you were born white, you already hit the lottery. So quit bitching and moaning and complaining about all of the people, the minorities that are making inroads. These people deserve to make inroads. And that's my last comment.
Ralph, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Sorry we couldn't get to the rest of the calls. Take care, Ralph. Sorry we couldn't get to the rest of the calls today. Maybe next time on All Sides with Ann Fisher. In the meantime, thanks for all your calls and your emails and your Facebook notes. Appreciate it. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.